until we learn to practice the system of governance effectively, we cannot expect to have the goods that we desire from it, okay? And I think it will not even be a fair assessment of the system as a form of government. We need to strengthen that. You asked about what has to be done. We need to strengthen and make our institutions work. We need to respect the rule of law. We need to strengthen accountability mechanisms. For me, this is very key. I mean, strengthening local governance systems instead of centralizing power in an executive president as we have in Ghana, and we need to really deal with issues of corruption effectively, okay?
Welcome to the Brentes Foundation podcast. I'm your host, Marie Noel, and it's a pleasure to be here with you. This is the podcast where I interview the best and brightest on some of the African continent's biggest and most pressing issues and leverage best practice, not just on what to do, but how to do it. The hope is that these conversations start many more and lead to the generation of ideas that work, ideas that make a difference. My name is Marinewa Ngokolo, and you're listening to the Brentes Foundation podcast. On today's episode, I will be joined by Ms. Rhoda Osiafo. Rhoda is a senior research analyst with the Ghana Center for Democratic Development, CDD Ghana, a leading governance, research, and advocacy think tank. CDD Ghana has been a consistent champion and promoter of decentralized governance and democratic local government. In the area of elections, CDD Ghana has worked consistently to enhance voter participation in elections and improve the credibility of elections in Ghana, including by pioneering the parallel voter tabulation, PVT methodology, to independently verify presidential election results in Ghana over the last three general elections. It's exciting to have Rhoda here because she is a remarkable and a phenomenal woman, and I can't wait for you to hear this conversation. So without further ado, let's get straight into the chat with Rhoda. So Rhoda, it's good to have you here. Welcome. How are you doing?
Thank you very much. I'm good. Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Yes, thank you for joining me. So to get us started, I thought maybe it would be helpful. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, the work you've been doing, and what's keeping you going at the moment?
All right. So my name is Rhoda Osiafo. In the past 10 years, I've been working with the Center for Democratic Development, or CDD Ghana, which is a non-governmental independent research and advocacy think tank based in Ghana. And essentially, I've been working with the center in the area of elections, election programming, but also more broadly on anti-corruption and the other governance areas of work of the organization. So effectively, my work has largely been in the area of elections, not just in Ghana, but also in our sub-region, in the ECOWAS sub-region in particular. Essentially, just working to promote electoral integrity in Ghana. And so in that respect, I've played quite some tremendous role in facilitating the work of Ghana's most credible and largest election observer group, which is the Coalition of Domestic Election Observers, or CODEO, as its acronym is. CODEO essentially was established some 21 years ago under the auspices of CDD Ghana. So you would say that in that sense, more or less like a baby of CDD, which has grown to be a huge project, but largely managed by CDD. So in my portfolio, I had the responsibility of managing CODEO's activities, providing managerial support, and also providing technical support, and sort of being the main linkage between CDD, which serves as the secretariat for CODEO, and the other organs of CODEO, which are the advisory board, the member organizations, and other organs. So we've been, in this regard, we've been working, trying to mobilize citizens to participate in the electoral process. We've been watching the electoral process as far as integrity is concerned, or electoral credibility is concerned. Also, a lot of work in the area of advocacy for electoral reforms and civic education and other related activities. Beyond Ghana, I have been also providing some technical support to sister organizations in other countries, like, I mean, in particular Nigeria, where we have other organizations that have been doing the kind of work we also do in Ghana. So we've been trying to deepen knowledge share, exchange and sharing of experiences, and have played some role in that respect. Yeah.
That's amazing. I think what I'm hearing from you is you do really excellent and important work. But you actually really went exactly where I wanted to start, which is Codeo. And Codeo is something that, you know, I had a chance to be a part of a little under a year ago. Was it we had elections? Maybe more than that. And I mean, it's a very sort of instrumental project, especially when it comes to this idea of advancing the democratic project, whether that's in Ghana or beyond. I think it'd be very interesting to hear a little bit about maybe some of the lessons that you learned from running Codeo, and some of the successes that it's had, the reason why Codeo like exists and should continue to exist, and maybe other countries, other African countries should consider having something like that.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at democratic systems and processes on our continent, but also very much elsewhere in other parts of the world, elections have come to be very fundamental or quite critical to this process. And so how elections go also to some extent also determines the course of democratic development, sort of. So in that respect, there's been a lot of emphasis by various actors trying to make sure that you get the basics right. And by the basics, I mean, one indicator will be elections, making sure that the means by which people come to occupy office, these means are fair, they are credible, they are transparent, and they elicit the kind of confidence that people can have in office holders. So there's quite enormous interest in elections. And for a place like Ghana, also, this we have a very competitive electoral atmosphere. And so elections are really, really a big deal. And you see a lot of interest galvanizing around this process. So for Codeo, the idea some 21 years ago was to see how best citizens can also come on board on this process, not just leave it to the political players, but also sort of monitor the process, provide some assessment to see if the processes are fair, they are consistent with democratic practices and standards. And this is where the idea emerged. And so over the years, Codeo has been monitoring almost all key electoral processes, key electoral activities in the country. And I would say, sir, I would say that in the 21 years of its existence, I think it's done considerably well. You talked about lessons. I think one critical element I will highlight is the role, I mean, is the idea of being nonpartisan, okay, because of the huge mistrust that we have, mistrust between, I mean, in the institutions of states, mistrust among the key players. The political parties don't trust each other, they don't trust the election management body, they don't trust the courts, and virtually almost every other player. It was very necessary that we made sure that in our attempt to also intervene in the process, we were also very non-partisan, because whether you were partisan or not had a lot to do in terms of your own bearing on the process. But this is something that Codeo has done quite well, which is to stick to its non-partisan principles in terms of the leadership, the people who lead the organization, in terms of the people who do the work on the ground. It's sometimes quite challenging, because if you're deploying, say, 7,000 people throughout the country, getting 7,000 people is not an easy task, and getting to know that they are really non-partisan people is, I mean, it's typically not a straightforward task, I should say. So it's been challenging, but to a large extent, we've been able to control for any level of infiltration or any engagement or manifestation that suggests that you are non-partisan. So in terms of the way in which we do our work, trying to be non-partisan, but also very professional. Yeah. So we have our instrument for observing elections, which we share with, I mean, it's open to anyone who wants to know, how do you arrive at your conclusions about the electoral process? So our tools for assessing the processes are fairly accessible on election day. If you came around to any of our observation centers, you will see our instruments displayed, but also the processes of arriving at the conclusion. We always make sure that we establish the basis for our stakeholders. You understand how we got to arrive at particular conclusions.
Right.
The basis are there, we use data and all of that. So keeping to your nonpartisan principles, but also demonstrating it in the way in which you work is very essential. But also another element that has helped the organization, I would say, will be in the area of leadership. Codeo has benefited tremendously from very selfless leaders, people who have led, and I'm looking at the advisory board, and people who have played the role of chairpersons for the coalition. These were very noble statesmen, and they commanded respect because of their own accomplishments in their personal, individual lives or private lives. And so and they brought a lot to bear in terms of the coalition and how it was perceived and how it was received by various stakeholders. So leadership played a key role, but also maybe one final point will be the support from the secretariat, which is CDD, providing the needed technical support, the insights, and the advice for the coalition. These have been very key. But the other part of your question relates to whether CODEO has really been able to achieve its objectives. And here I would say, in measuring objectives, it's important that we look at, in looking at success, you asked about success, I would say that in looking at success, we have the reference points will be our objectives. And our main objectives have been to deepen public confidence in the electoral process, to monitor the process, make sure that you are deterring electoral fraud, and also deepening citizen participation. And I think these are, to a large extent, we the organization has done well because it's been able to get to that point where people really believe that it brings something to the electoral process. Okay, so public confidence and stakeholder trust in the coalition is really high, and in terms of citizen participation, the mobilization too has been very well done over the years. And I think these are areas that we can say that significantly we've done quite well.
Certainly. And 100% agree with you. And I know, for instance, Ghana, electoral processes haven't been without their issues. But I know organizations mm-hmm. like they and the output that they have out there have been quite instrumental, helpful to give people some sort of credibility in what has been put out there in the end. So it surely does play its part. One thing you mentioned, Rhoda, at the start of the conversation was this idea of elections as one of the basics. And I think that's really important because sometimes people think about, when they are talking about democracy, it's just elections and then full stop. But it's not really the case, right? The act of holding elections is by itself not exactly sufficient to sustain the democracy. Mm-hmm. It's part of it. And I think this is something that we hear a lot, but what would be particularly interesting to hear a bit more about is what are some of the things that ought to be happening in the middle, right, between elections, and whose responsibility is it to drive that, especially when it comes to this idea of deepening democracy, making that a more public concern or area of interest?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I said initially, elections are key because they provide the basic vehicle through which basic democratic rights are exercised and some measure of accountability is exerted. But as you pointed out, that there's much more to be done if democracies are really to work and to deliver on their expected value. And I often say to people who feel a bit despondent about democracy that it is, until we learn to practice the system of governance effectively, we cannot expect to have the goods that we desire from it, okay? Mm-hmm. And I think it will not even be a fair assessment of the system as a form of government. We need to strengthen that. You asked about what has to be done. We need to strengthen and make our institutions work. We need to respect the rule of law. We need to strengthen accountability mechanisms. For me, this is very key. Strengthening local governance systems instead of centralizing power in an executive president as we have in Ghana. And we need to really deal with issues of corruption effectively, okay? For us in Ghana, part of this solution will be to take a look at the constitution and to see how we can strengthen areas where there are weaknesses. And I know that we have made some attempts in the past in this direction. Like I mentioned, we have an overbearing president. I mean, the president who has so much power, which enables him to practically do anything, and he can still get away with a lot of things. But it's unfortunate that years back, we started to look at this, at our constitution to see how we can strengthen it, but we could not take it to a very fruitful conclusion in terms of realizing the full benefits of a constitutional review processes. So we have challenges in that regard, but I think all stakeholders have a role to play. I'll focus on citizens in particular, okay? I think we need to realize the enormous power that we have as citizens in regulating the power of office holders, regardless of the limits that we may have, okay? There's power in, there's so much we can do in utilizing our collective voice to demand accountability and something like even better service delivery. Unfortunately, I think partisan polarization is something that has effectively limited our abilities to really galvanize and to really weigh in on the processes, because we are divided on different lines. But there's a lot of room for also state and non-state actors with a mandate to educate and sensitize citizens on some of these issues. Unfortunately, some of these actors suffer from challenges such as limited resources. But I think this is where we need to connect non-state actors and state actors. We have institutions that have responsibilities for sensitizing the public in terms of what role they can play in this democratic process. And we have institutions like the one I work for, CDD, which have also been championing some of these issues. How do we connect with the citizens and help mobilize around some of these issues? Because there are sometimes we are limited in terms of how far we can go with what we want to do. But if we're able to connect well with citizens and let them understand why certain things need to be pursued vigorously, I think we would be making much progress, so that in between elections, the space between elections, we can do so much in terms of regulating power, in terms of holding office holders accountable for their deeds and checking other things like corruption and all of that. Yeah.
Awesome. No, that's definitely very helpful. And I completely agree with you, because you usually have quite a number of people, and we sort of see that on social media now quite, you know, hugely, where people seem, you know, disenchanted sort of with this whole project, mm-hmm. because there's some frustration and people not knowing mm-hmm. where the agency is, how much agency they have, and what that actually could look like. So thank you very much for sharing those. Now, one thing I wanted to touch on as well is, so Afrobarometer, which also, I guess, was birthed by CDD. CDD really apparently does so much more in Ghana and other places on the continent, really, found that in many countries, for instance, Africans want more democracy than they say they are getting. This, I imagine, obviously, for organizations like CDD and people that are pushing the democratic project, would be a cause for optimism. For an organization like CDD, right, what does this mean? What does it mean that people want more than there seems to be supply of? And what are mm-hmm. the options available to deepen democracy, you know, on the continent at the moment? Yeah. What would it look like to meet that demand?
Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, indeed. I would say popular support for democracy is one major indicator that we track, the Afrobarometer tracks, and we also follow keenly on from the Afrobarometer surveys, because you want to really understand how the public views democracy with democratic governance, with various developments across the continent. And this is an essential ingredient, because it will be more difficult to promote or implement the system of governance if the support is not there already. But it also means that the grounds are fertile, okay? People are receptive. People are open to the idea of democratic governance, okay? But at the same time, it's not thriving as we expect it to be. Because as I indicated earlier, we have not given it our best chance. But the basic tenets of the system have not been allowed to prevail, and we continue to see these worrying developments in diverse respects, including the pervasive corruption, which has severely constrained resources that are available for development, which then links to the idea of people being disillusioned because they feel it's not delivering up to expectation. There's significant mistrust in state institutions, including, unfortunately, the judiciary. I think I mentioned this also. And quite worrying also is the fact that in recent times, we've also seen some slight decline on this particular indicator, some slight decline in terms of popular support for democracy. And what this means is that we need to double up our efforts, okay, in diverse respects. Our efforts in promoting governmental transparency and accountability. Okay, how much can we do in this area in terms of making sure that governments are accountable, governments are transparent, and also the issue of active citizenship, which I mentioned. I mean, for institutions like CDD, I think these are areas that we can do more. But also the media, strengthening the media so that they can effectively play their watchdog role, because there's a lot that they can also do to support the growth of our democracy. There's room in the area of institutional strengthening, there's room for work. The area of institutional strengthening, local governance and constitutional effectiveness. So there are linkages in all these different aspects of the process, but essentially the point is that there's a lot of work to be done in these areas, and also we step up and double up our efforts in these areas. We will have these gaps and persistent challenges that we see with our democracies, and we might not realize the full benefits of the system. Yeah.
Rhoda, if I may ask, and I know it's not an easy question, or maybe perhaps it is, but for some of the people that are growing disillusioned, there are some of these ways to go about it, but why is democracy the answer? Why is it important to stick with the democratic project? Can you share some insights on that, your thoughts, if you have any?
I mean, I think recently, a couple of years ago, we had an engagement with some young people who came through our center on a study tour or something. And in the course of discussions, some Africans amongst them and some Ghanaians amongst them raised the issue of why we actually need to pursue democracy and whether it's worth the pursuit, because he thinks that it's not an appropriate system, or it's not an ideal system. And I keep asking myself, what's the alternative? Okay, people will say we used to have our traditional systems of rule, and I ask them, can you point me to one traditional system that you think we can effectively rely on in our current or a modern form of states to effectively govern our society? Because if you look at Ghana, for instance, we have different societies, we have different states, if I should put it, or nations. But it is difficult really to say that people talk about alternatives all the time without really providing an alternative, okay? But we have something that if we could just strengthen or work on some of the loopholes that we have, we could really do well with it, okay? You have a system that guarantees freedom, guarantees the exercise of rights and liberties, okay? At a minimum, guarantees a certain level of participation by citizens. And I ask myself, which other fairer system can you think of? To the extent that we've not been able to have an alternative, I think this is something that we can make it work, and it can help our cause. And for me, this is why the democratic project is essential, also because it has the potential to drive development and to help us meet our socioeconomic expectations. And I think we just need to just really work at it and make sure that we strengthen the weaknesses that we continue to see. There are systems that we always look up to. We cannot transport them into our system directly, but I think we can borrow some elements and learn from them, bring our own context to bear on them, But I think we can still make some good progress if we set our minds and really our efforts at making it work. Yeah.
No, awesome. Thank you so much. And I wanted to go back to two things that you mentioned before, which is sort of the nature of the political space, if I can call it, in Ghana, right? I think a lot of people that have studied it would definitely highlight some of these patron-client systems that exist where we conduct political processes. And even the connection to corruption, we can probably make that assumption at some point. But I'm just wondering, how do we get out of that rut for a country like that, any other place where it exists? What are the options to break out of that system where these patrons willingly or begrudgingly give, and people willingly, maybe not unwillingly, also demand in exchange for, especially when it comes to elections like this? So it's a system that is quite vicious in and of itself. But I'm just wondering, it's been entrenched so much almost from the start of sort of this democratic process in Ghana. What does it look like to break out of that?
I mean, you were right. Clientless politics is indeed worrying in our political system, particularly because it weakens vertical accountability. Okay, many citizens will look away from certain things because it involves their patrons. Okay, this act is wrong, but because it's my godfather, or it's coming from somebody within my political party, my political clan, I'm looking away. I don't think it's an issue. Okay, we only see it as an issue when it involves some other client. I mean, some other patron.
Yeah,
and particularly for the youth, it closes up the space for political participation because they do not have the means, they do not have the goodies, they do not have the resources needed to mobilize, to galvanize people around them and to participate in such a system. Or even when they find a way to even participate, they find it difficult to survive, okay? Because sometimes surviving means you have to pursue some illegitimate means to be able to pay through. And that is unfortunate. The same system also makes the youth vulnerable to practices like thuggery, or what in Ghana we would call political vigilantism, and undermine the quality of their participation because, like I said, the signal that this particular system sends to them is that so far as you are getting the goodies, you should look away. And this ultimately has a way of threatening their future, because if the goodies are available through some illegitimate means today, it means resources that are needed to develop your health system, your educational system, those are not going into the right direction. And ultimately, you are going to be hurt in the long run. So it's really a big challenge, okay? But I also think that the youth can exercise agency. Sometimes there are challenges. And I think you mentioned earlier some development that we've seen in recent times, and I agree. I mean, we've seen a few developments in recent times in Ghana, which gives some kind of hope that the youth can really drive change, okay? And they continue to do that even though it's limited. Now, when they utilize the power of social media to draw attention to pertinent issues, I think they really get some attention, okay? And if you look at what recently has been happening in Ghana with the Fix the Country movement, if I should call it that way, or protest, you see that the youth were able to mobilize quite effectively, not just online, but also were able to take this on the streets, and they were able to really organize or stage one very successful protest, okay, political protest in recent times. And this really triggered reaction from government and its elements, okay? So they are not really powerless, and they can do something. I believe if really they can do a lot more of this, we can drive some change just utilizing the collective voices. Unfortunately, sometimes, as I again indicated somewhere, because of the undue polarization, their front gets divided, okay? Because whether I choose to join this movement or that movement, to some extent, is determined by which party I am affiliated to. or not. So it's not always the case for all of them, but for some of them, I think they confront this dilemma sometimes. They really appreciate the challenges, but they feel constrained. This is my party. I can't do this to my party. And I think these are the areas that they receive some challenges. But I think there's also a role or room for actors, other actors like activist networks, like civil society organizations, to connect with some of these these groups or youth activists in terms of providing them some guidance and mentorship. Sometimes maybe it's just some information in terms of what you can really do and what you may not really want to do and stuff like that. And I think we can make some progress if this is really done well.
No, thank you. I definitely appreciate that. And I like the message of, you know, the youth have agency. People actually do have agency. And we just need to figure out how to actually use that, how to inform people about the kinds of agency that they have and to be able to pursue that. Rhoda, the very last question I have for you before you go is, you hinted, you mentioned this earlier, actually, when you talked about, you know, the powers of the presidency and even some, you know, efforts that were made to try to change things with the constitution but haven't yet been fruitful. And I think that reminds me of a conversation I had with someone once, and also a paper actually I read recently from CDD on democracy capture, but we don't necessarily have to go down that way. But I was wondering, in times where it feels like, you know, the people that can make the change stand to benefit from the status quo, how do you deal with that? What are the options to that? Because usually, I guess, if you look at, you know, historical precedents on the continent, even in other places, sometimes the elites change when there's something at risk, but nobody's advocating for anarchy either. Nobody really looks for any of those things. So what are some of the ways that we can get around, you know, these instances where the change we need is almost being like blocked by the people of the political elite who stand to benefit from the way things are?
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't put it better. It sometimes feels like it's like a bird trapped in a cage, okay? If you're looking at something like constitutional reforms, because how do reforms come about? How do we get to get reforms really in place, okay? The constitution already has put some measures in place if you want to amend the constitution, okay? Which means that the veto players who are in the system have to come to some consensus. And so to the extent that they are not buying into the idea of reforms, it means you are limited in terms of what you think can be done. So it's been challenging. And we've had a recent experience where in 2019, the current president tried to introduce reforms in the area of local governance to see if we can have, one, the election of municipal, district, and metropolitan executives, or MMDCs, as we call them. These are people who represent the president at the local level. They wield some amount of power within their districts, and essentially they are the lead development agents in these districts. But they are, by a constitutional design, they are accountable to the president. They are not directly accountable to the people because they are appointed by the president. They can only be sacked if the president feels they have to be sacked, whether they are performing very well whether they are not performing well or not. And so the citizens are really limited in terms of exercising some level of accountability over these actors. So the president, we thought, had a good idea of saying, let's amend our constitution so that these people are elected. If they are elected and they are directly accountable to citizens, there's a lot that we think we can get from them than the current arrangement. And also another element was to make the local government system partisan, because currently it's non-partisan. And we really have low level of participation because the parties are not involved, and more or less like it's not exciting to the citizens, unfortunately. And so we continue to see very low turnout in local government elections. So these reforms that were proposed by the president, we thought were good, but what happened? It hit a snag, essentially because there was no consensus between the two main parties. And even within the president's party, even though these reforms were being championed by the president within his own party, there was not really any consensus in terms of whether his party really agreed with him that we should go forward in this, because they believe that, I mean, and this is not something that's just unique to the president's party, but also the other, the main opposition, the NDC, because the parties believe that some amount of control will leave their hands if people get to directly elect local government executives, okay? Because in this current arrangement, they have control. In some instances, it's even the party executives who interview people, and then finally we get an announcement that these people have been appointed by the president. So it's really challenging because the system already traps change, the mechanisms by which change can be delivered. But I think there's still room for actors outside of the political system. And here I'm looking at actors like organizations like ours, civil society organizations, interest groups, but also the citizens in general. And as far as this particular issue is concerned, this is something that we are trying to do. We are going back to this issue, trying to engage different actors to see if we can mobilize various actors outside of the political system, but also we'll be trying to engage the political actors because they are still key in this process. So, I mean, bottom line of what I'm saying is that the nature of some of our systems per our constitutional design is it doesn't really facilitate change in the way in which you would want it to be, the speed with which you would want it to be delivered, but there's still it only means that other actors outside of the political system have to do a lot more in terms of connecting with citizens, making them understand why some of these changes are necessary. And I think once citizens buy into the idea and they come on board, I think there's very little that actors can then do in terms of trying to resist change. So because I still believe in the power of the people, once they are very unanimous and they are very focused, I think it will be difficult for the political players to really resist change that is driven by the citizens. Yeah.
Amazing. Rhoda, I can probably talk to you for hours and hours on end. But thank you so much for making the time to have this conversation with me. It's been absolutely insightful.
My pleasure. And I wish you the very best.
Thank you. All too soon, we've come to the end of today's episode with Ms. Rhoda Osiafo. Don't forget to share this episode with others, and please follow our social media channels to be kept updated on future episodes, as well as the excellent publications that we put out here at the Brentes Foundation. As always, thanks for listening. It's been a pleasure sharing this time with you, and until next week, stay well.